Hello and welcome. Scare Track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming.
Spoiler alert!
Freaking awesome.
The quality of the set was amazing.
Oh, I don't like it.
Hello and welcome to the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey, and on today's episode, we are interviewing Jason Carl, the creative director of Scare Kingdom Scream Park. Now, Scare Kingdom Scream Park is a fantastic event that we go to each and every season here at Scare Track, and we also love to go to their out-of-season attractions as well. Obviously, 2020 is a little bit of a different year, but they are open this Halloween season. We can't wait to go and visit and bring you an on-location episode from Scare Kingdom. However, we thought we'd get Jason onto the show beforehand to give us a little bit of background information about Scare Kingdom Scream Park as a whole, talk about each and every attraction they have on offer this Halloween season, and of course to go through all the COVID secure guidelines and the procedures that Scare Kingdom Scream Park are putting in place. So without any further ado, let's take you to the interview with myself and Jason Carl, the creative director of Scare Kingdom Scream Park.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I am here with Jason Carl, the creative director at Scare Kingdom Scream Park. Jason, welcome to the Scare Track Podcast.
Hello, thank you very much.
It's great to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on. And I'm very excited to say that Scare Kingdom Scream Park will be open for this Halloween season. Fantastic news.
Yes, absolutely. We are complying with all of the relevant guidelines. And because we're a bit different from some of the other Scream Parks in terms of our usual operation, has actually worked to our advantage in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. We could obviously touch on the sort of COVID-19 measures that are taking place at Scare Kingdom Scream Park a little bit later as well. But I want to find out a little bit more, obviously, about the park and about yourself. So what's your role with Scare Kingdom Scream Park?
My role is the creative director, and so unlike previous years, because it's been open a long time, I don't really get involved in too much other areas of the park. People often ask me questions about things that I absolutely know nothing about. But anything creative is down to me and my team. So as the creative director, my job is to conceptualize ideas and then guide and steer a team of creative people who develop those ideas into workable attractions. And then my job also is to kind of oversee things like construction, scenic art, to ensure that the concept of the attraction is followed through. I'm kind of like the vision keeper, if you like. And then my job ends when the park is open.
Oh, perfect. So you can kind of have a relaxing October in some sort of way then.
Well, come the beginning of Scare Kingdom, or indeed any of our other parks that we're involved with as atmosphere, absolutely, I walk away. So they don't want me around, trust me. They hate it if I arrive on site, which is very rare, but they don't want me there, and I don't blame them.
So you do all the hard work at the beginning, get everything set up, created, the design, the whole sort of shebang, really, and then you give it to your hardworking team to run throughout the event.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are different teams that do different roles. There's the operations team, there's the actors team, there's the marketing team, there's all kinds of different departments that I have absolutely nothing to do with. And once the park is ready for the guests, once it's show ready, my job is done. And as I said, they really don't want me here.
Perfect. And you mentioned earlier, obviously, Scare Kingdom's been around quite a while now, a fair few number of years. I know you celebrated your 10-year anniversary recently as well. And obviously, the event's grown over the years with the multiple different departments you just mentioned, from actors and set and whatnot. How has Scare Kingdom evolved over the years of scaring?
Scare Kingdom Scream Park started in 2009, but we did create an attraction at this venue in 2008. So prior to it becoming Scare Kingdom Scream Park, we did a big, huge walk through a cornfield attraction called Hex in the Harvest in 2008. And it was in 2009 that Scare Kingdom Scream Park, with multiple different scare entertainment attractions, was conceived and began. And it started off with two attractions in 2009. So we had Bloodbath, which was a marquee-based attraction. I would never do those anymore. And a cornfield attraction called Dead Alive. And I would never do those anymore either. all our attractions are installed indoors now, and that brings with it a lot of benefits that outdoor attractions or marquees don't give you.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose that's how it's grown, especially with the likes of, I know, Man of Mortis was purpose-built, and it means that it can stand all year round and whatnot. And same with Body Snatchers and probably a number, all of them are now actually.
And have been for many years now. Which allows us the luxury of spending money and investing into changes, as opposed to spending the money on ripping things down and putting them back up again, which obviously is a huge amount of money and labour each year if we weren't lucky enough to be able to do it the way that we can now.
Of course, absolutely. And I guess that's another thing that sort of benefits you in being able to open during a COVID world. And this season, lots of events are not being able to open purely because a lot of them are building throughout the summer and things like that. So the fact that Scare Kingdom Scream Park, it's there, you know, your sets, your buildings, it's there all year round. It means that you can focus on, like you say, investing in the actual attraction rather than investing money into knocking it down and building it again, but also benefit Scare Kingdom Scream Park as a whole in making it COVID secure and being able to open for the 2020 season.
Absolutely. And also the business model that we put into place many, many years ago now also required and allows us to open the park at different times during the year. We have relatively big Christmas festival events. We have a Valentine's event and also a Walpurgis night event. And in previous years, we've also had different kinds of things over the summer, although we haven't done that in the last couple of years. And the main reason for that is because last year we ripped out a huge theatre ballroom that we used to have and use for our Horicant live show. And that's all ripped out, and a two-story production centre with makeup rooms, costume departments, technical was all put in there. So that's is now used as a production space as opposed to a show space.
Perfect, excellent. And again, the fact that it's purpose-built, it's there, it just makes the whole operation of it go far smoother, I'm sure, every season that you do you guys do open. And that's something I wanted to touch on, actually. You know, for Scare Kingdom Scream Park, it's one of our favourite of ours, purely because we don't have to wait another 12 months to visit you. You can visit you during Valentine's, Christmas, and whatnot. And you also, you kind of definitely go out the box. I mean, we just touching on the attractions such as Snuff House and Psychomantium. Why was the process made to sort of add more extreme-esque style attractions to the lineup?
I wouldn't class Psychomantium as an extreme attraction now.
Yeah,
I think
the
term extreme attraction is one that kind of organically happened due to the rise of immersive theatre around the world and of various attractions or experiences rather than attractions. For example, Caney Manor would be the most internationally renowned one. But I don't sort of put those now in the way that we present those productions as extreme. They are different. Mm-hmm. They are experiences that are created for 18 plus because the themes that they include can be considered adult.
Yeah.
But they are, I wouldn't say they were extreme attractions. The reason that we brought that in, which was your question, initially, I think was 2013, I may be corrected, but we wanted to know whether an alone attraction would be successful in a screen park environment where people pay one charge for all of the attractions. And we didn't know whether guests would be willing or even want to pay a small upcharge in order to experience something on their own. So the initial installation of Psychomantium was done very, very cheaply, and it was based on a show which I had written 10 years earlier, which was intended to be something totally different. It was still called Psychomantium with a medical theme, but it was not intended to be an alone, extreme-type experience. Mm-hmm. So we did it as a test, and we couldn't get people through quick enough. It was incredibly successful. managed to engineer an international PR coup with it, which served us well.
Definitely. The Sun called it the UK's sickest attraction. I mean, you can't get any better than that, can you?
Definitely is. I mean, it definitely is sick in both senses of the word, actually. And so over the years, it's now a staple part of Scare Kingdom Scream Park's offering, not only at the Halloween season, but also across the rest of the year. And every time it's presented, it is different. Mm-hmm. We don't always rip all the sets apart, but we do always change what happens and the narrative and the lighting and sound, et cetera, to make it a fresh experience. And the key thing with that is that we shock people a bit and sort of make them coming out going, oh my goodness, what the F have I just experienced? Yeah. And that's the idea with it. Snuff House was a different animal and was very short-lived, and I didn't like it personally. Snuff House was probably the only time in my career that I allowed a different creative to lead it and vision it. And to my downfall, it turned out to be something that I didn't really like. Yeah. And so, as I say, very short-lived and not to be repeated.
There you go. Exclusive. Snuff House never coming back.
But
Psycho Mantium is, and like you say, it's been now a staple since 2013, with only a very short break whilst Snuff House was there. And you're right, yeah, over the years you'd probably describe it as less so extreme, but something that is very different out of the box. More of an intense Alone style attraction, isn't it? Absolutely.
Yeah, it isn't Alone anymore, which is also interesting. Yeah. 2 years ago, we did a test during one of our seasonal openings to see whether two people going in together, what sort of reaction would that make? From my point of view, I was more interested in the psychological difference in terms of the experience and whether going into that type of experience with your friend, your mate, your partner, etc., would lessen it and therefore destroy it. And surprisingly, I was wrong, which, you know, that's not surprising. I'm wrong quite a lot. Bex here is nodding her head. But I was wrong. And actually, it didn't destroy the psychological impact that the experience has on people. And so what we did find is that more people wanted to go in it because they were less frightened, because they were with their friend, their partner, etc. What they didn't realise is that in the majority of installations, they were actually split up anyway once they get inside. And different things happen to each of them sometimes. On other occasions, the entire experience is the same for the two people, but occasionally they're split and different things happen. So now it's no longer an Alone experience. It is an experience for two people.
And it does definitely give that extra dynamic to it now as well. Like you say, I would probably feel different going through it with one of my friends as opposed to going in with one of my family members or my partner and whatnot. It does add...
Take your grandmother through. It's going to be
absolutely
very
interesting. Yeah. She might not like that one, definitely. obviously, Scare Kingdom Scream Park, it's brought us the likes of Psycho Mantium, which is definitely out of the box and different. But the whole event as a whole it's known for the script work and the character work, amongst a whole host of other things. You're not just a bunch of people shouting boo in dark corridors, which obviously we all hate that word, but there's lots of script work, there's lots of very dynamic character work as well. What's the sort of creative process in creating those sort of stories and characters? I understand you often have an array of original concepts that you guys create, but also you take inspiration from historical characters throughout time as well. So what's the sort of process when creating an attraction at Scare Kingdom Scream Park?
Well, because the installations are not totally ripped apart and altered, for example, Manor Mortis is set in a Victorian mansion. And so your parameters of creativity are what could happen in a Victorian mansion. You know, you can't have aliens you could, I suppose, but it wouldn't make much sense. So you have to look into the parameters of what are you trying to present here visually, and then work into that a storyline that would settle perfectly into that fictional environment. And we're very careful about how we operate the universe, as we call it, about what could and couldn't happen within each of the attractions, which are all set in different time periods. And we keep very stringent records and family trees of people who lived in the house and when and what's happened, etc. So when we want to create a new story, the first port of call will be to look at the universe and see where there are gaps in the timeline, for example, of Manor Mortis. And then that will be the seed point for a created narrative that we haven't used before. For example, there are a lot of timelines in the Man and Mortis story that have never become an attraction yet, right, but will do in the future. For example, there is a big Knights Templar story associated with the timeline of Man and Mortis, but we've never created an experience from that. So at some point that will occur. Mm-hmm. And so those are the start points. And then we look at the different themes that would fit within each fictional universe of the attraction itself. And then we look at, well, what's popular, what things are people liking in the horror pop culture genre of entertainment at this time, or in the time when the attraction will open. So we look at books, television shows, films. That's not to say that we ever lift anything from those. We certainly don't. But we would look at what themes might be popular. Yeah. So, for example, if clown themes are popular, we might think about doing something to do with circus. If ghosts are popular, then we might look at that. That wouldn't necessarily inform our decision, but it would be part of the creative process at the Blue Sky stage. Right. And then from that, we would end up with one line, probably, which is a story. And then from that, the rest of the development would take place. And then we would look at, well, what one of the very early things is, what are the scares? Mm-hmm. So what are the ways that we're going to scare people? Because there are so many different ways. And then once those are decided, it's like a formula that you put into a pot, mix it around, and then out comes a show. And then much, much later, you have things like character development, costume development, makeup, sound, special effects, all of that kind of thing come much later in the creative process. And then throughout the installation or construction, if it's new, we will make sure that the vision of that is withheld within the original idea so that it makes sense within our fictional universe, if that makes sense. And the majority of people visiting really couldn't care less. Because subconsciously they might understand it better than subconsciously. If they haven't really interacted with the story or taking it on board, that doesn't really matter. And that's important too, is that we make sure the experience is fun and spooky and scary, irrelevant of whether you've engaged with the storyline or not. It's not really relevant, but for some of our guests, it's very important. And for us as an entertainment provider, it's really important to me that we entertain people, not just simply do something that anyone could do, which, as you said, might be turn off lights and make a big noise. Anyone can, that's not clever or creative, in my opinion. That's our process in a nutshell.
Of course, yeah. Excellent. And like you say, it is a piece of entertainment. It's a creative process to create something entertaining for people. And you hit the nail on the head there. There will be so, I'm sure your target market and your clientele will have, you'll have so many different variations of people, that just want to go and get scared and not really know of what the story is, and it just goes over their head because they're too scared of the dark. And then you'll have other people who dissect everything. I suppose it's a bit like theatre performances. Lots of people go just wanting to watch someone sing and dance, whereas I'm looking at what kind of lighting changes there are and what the set piece is behind and the bit of physical theatre that no one else notices in the background. But you're, so again, you got to tick all those boxes. And like I say, because Scare Kingdom Screen Park, they have you can tell you guys have such a creative process, and the background behind creating these entertainment pieces, it definitely comes through for all likes of clientele.
It's really important that people enjoy it, and then when you dissect about how and why people enjoy things, it's a bit more interesting psychologically. Mm-hmm. Because I would say that if you ask the question to a majority of guests, they would just say, I want to be scared. But actually, the process of getting them to feel threatened or feel scared is very complicated psychologically. And it is not down simply to a loud noise and a surprise. Mm-hmm. Things like the set, the smell, the temperature, the lighting, the sound, all of those things collectively are what make people feel under threat. And so each of those things are important. And for me, having done this for such a long time, and for the teams that are here, that sort of attention to detail is really, really important. Yeah. And I'm quite often fighting a battle with the finance people saying, we want to do this and this is how we want to do it. And they'll say, well, we don't need to do that. And, well, why do we need to do this and that and the other? But unless you have all of these jigsaw pieces, the whole jigsaw is not complete for me.
Of course.
And it's really important that we want people to come back. We want people to have value for money, and we want people to enjoy their experience here and say it was good. And if that's down to the fact that they have cognitively realized there is a story, or if they've just subconsciously taken that in, it doesn't matter, as long as they've enjoyed themselves.
Yes, no, absolutely. And this year, this season, 2020, at Scare Kingdom Screen Park, you've got 7 attractions that are there to scare and entertain. Are we able to go through each attraction, just give a little bit of a snippet? So obviously, first up is the High Tea. If you could explain a little bit about that attraction for us.
Well, Horrid High Tea with Scrap Faggot and Filch was put in about a month ago because we had a change of mind. Initially, when we launched in March, we were going to have the first experience of called the Dead Line, which was going to be a Victorian train carriage-based experience. I won't tell you any more about it because we will bring it back next year. But because of the logistical build of the building in which that attraction is housed wouldn't allow us to properly social distance. So we decided a month or so ago that we would not be using that building because we can't. So therefore we had to create something different. And the idea was, well, shall we just not have this this element of the show? Shall we just pull it, or shall we replace it with something different? And that's what I decided to do. So Horrid High Tea with Scrap Faggot and Filch is a vignette street theatre type experience where guests, after checking into the box office and going through our photography units, will then meet these two characters as they wander into the park. It's more like a welcome to the park. It certainly is an attraction, and we wouldn't call it that. We call it an experience. Very short-lived and quite funny. Scrap Faggot and Filch are actually two characters that were conceived and produced 2 years ago initially for a different production that I was involved with, a different scare attraction. And that attraction was Nightmare Nights on the Isle of Man. It isn't running this year because of COVID. So Scrap Faggot and Filch characters were so popular that we decided to bring them across here for a holiday. So they are at Scare Kingdom Screen Park this year, having a ridiculous and horrific tea party. Scrap Faggot is a Victorian butler, and Mrs. Filch is his wife, we think. And she's a sort of cook. And so you'll meet these zany, wacky, weird, certainly not frightening, but weird and spooky characters as you walk through into the park after you've experienced the photography unit and the box office check-in. So it's a small thing, but it is better than nothing. And as I said, the deadline is shelved for next year. We will do it, but obviously not this year.
Perfect. So we got that to look forward to for 2021. And then this year we have the return of the Paradise Foundation, but new heading of Bliss TV. We love the Paradise Foundation last year, such a different kind of concept. Can you let our listeners know a little bit more about that?
Sure. The Paradise Foundation, I often get asked the question, what's your favourite story you've ever written, Jason? And I've conceived over 300 scare attractions in the last 20 years.
Wow.
And although some of those are variations of ones that have existed before, the Paradise Foundation is, for me, one of my favourite narratives. It's a really obscure one. At its core, it's a Frankenstein story mixed with political satire. So the idea is that this organisation exists with this mega mastermind, very odd, strange, godlike doctor called Dr. Prometheus, and he is providing bliss. He is providing happiness. How is he doing that? Well, he's selling organs from people who don't have much money and want to sell their organs to people who have lots of money and aren't happy. What's the science behind this? Well, there is a strand of science behind it, because there are some scientists and some research has been done which shows that inherited memory is not stored only in the mind, and that certain types of medical procedures where people have replacement parts inserted into their body from other people, that they then can maybe speak another language or have a hobby they've never thought of before, different kinds of things. So there is a little bit of science behind this. We've obviously taken it to the extreme and thrown in a lot of artistic license. So the idea is that if you're poor and want to sell your body parts, you can, to the Paradise Foundation, and then somebody rich will buy them and become happy or happier. So this year, the story has been taken a step further, where the Paradise Foundation is failing. There's not enough business. There's not enough money coming in. So they've opened a shopping channel called Bliss TV on the dark web, on channel 666. And people are now buying and ordering body parts on shopping television. And that's the overlay storyline this year. So there are some new characters in there, including the producer of the channel, Milton Blaster, the security guard, Servalax is the television host, a sort of television presenter gone awry. And so, yeah, it's a different storyline. With one of the rooms has been ripped out totally and redone, and there have been some other small changes in there, and it's all new music. One of our creatives conceived a new piece of music theme tune for the show, because the Paradise Foundation always had the same theme tune in its previous two incarnations. So there's been a few changes, and a sort of comical storyline being put across the top of it.
Definitely. And in fairness, I'm skint at the minute due to COVID, so I might be selling some body parts on Bliss TV for sure. Manor Mortis, obviously returning, a fantastic attraction. It's a highlight every season for us. And this time we have a ghost story.
Yeah, Manor Mortis Ghost Story is using a lot of very famous, out of copyright, ghost tales, largely by Montague Rose James, M.R. James, and we have that character in the show at the beginning. And then as you move through the various rooms, you'll encounter the different ghosts from his stories. Now, this might be lost on the majority of people. They probably won't have read the stories or heard them, and they probably won't care anyway. That's fine, because each of the ghosts are, in their own rights, unpleasant, obviously, and there to scare you. But if you are a fan of ghost stories and you have read that material, you will notice all of the significant nods to the various tales, for example, A Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, or A View from a Hill, or The Rose Garden, etc. So that's the theme of Manor Mortis this year. It fits into the storyline in terms of our timeline of Manor Mortis. So yeah. M.R. James is visiting the house, and in some way that is undisclosed, the manifestations of his stories have come to become real and are now inhabiting the space.
Amazing. Perfect. Sounds fun. Fantastic. And then we have the Blitz as well with The Hunger.
Blitz last year was a huge success for us.
Yeah, I loved it.
It's an unusual attraction in that it's basically just a dark tunnel with the lights off, which kind of goes against what I said before. But
it definitely worked.
It does have a narrative to it, and the form of the attraction is different to the others in that, as I say, the lights are off and you have these characters on the other side, I should say, of a partition wall, and they are illuminated momentarily by flashlights, and guests are given a flashlight as they walk through this one-way tunnel. Because Blitz was so well received last year as a narrative, we decided to bring it back again and just make it a little bit more extreme. So this time the inhabitants of the church are carnivorous and are trying to eat you. And so it's a little bit of a step further in the narrative that was presented last year in a slightly different way.
Perfect. Excellent. Looking forward to that one. And then again, Body Snatchers, which is one that comes back each and every season that you guys open throughout the year. Body Snatchers is the Chamber of Horrors.
Yes, this is based on Madame Marie Tussaud, who came to England and opened a show in London, as most people will probably know. Mm-hmm. One of her early shows was A Chamber of Horrors. And in our story, which is set in Old London Town, Body Snatchers is always set in Old London Town. She is presenting a test audience viewing of her show. So in our narrative, she has hired the space and the building temporarily from the Undertakers, and she is presenting what she has created for her Chamber of Horrors. And at the beginning of the experience in our alleyway set, Knox Alley, you will meet Madame Marie Tussaud, who will explain it to you. There's one talking character per show this year. Mostly actually in previous incarnations of Scare Entertainment Attractions at Scare Kingdom Screen Park, we have multiple stop and listen points. Might be you'll be walking through and then you'll stop and you'll have some voice dialogue presented, etc. Well, at this time, in order to make it COVID compliant, we're only doing that with the first character of each attraction.
I see. So
first character will set up the narrative, and then the rest of the characters will not be dialogue driven, they will be impact driven, with the exception of Body Snatchers, which has two of those points. So there is one at the beginning and one midway in Body Snatchers, but the others, it's more impact and less dialogue.
I see, yeah, and that works quite well with Body Snatchers, in essence. I remember the scene that was sort of put in a year or so ago, sort of where everyone sits around within the middle of that. It is sort of like two attractions together to make one big, fantastic Body Snatchers theme, isn't it? So I guess that works perfect.
Initially, the concept for Body Snatchers was twofold when I conceived it to start with. It was a funeral Undertakers, which we'd never done before. Mm-hmm. And one of my favourite movies gave me an idea of the cellar dwellers and the cellar beneath, which was the people in the walls, or was it called? Something like that. Famous film, which is one of my favourites. People Under the Stairs, that's it. And so the second half of the attraction, when it was initially built, was the cellars, which were largely pitch black and required navigation through darkness. And then last year, we decided to redo that. So last year, for the Sweeney Todd version of that show, we reconceived the cellars into a stop, sit down, and something happen experience with the window room, which is a double height epic scene. And so that's now permanently in that attraction. So for this year, we've used that as the sort of culmination where you meet the new creation by Toussaint in that lights on, lights off, sit down scene. And we're able to do that within COVID compliancy.
Perfect. Excellent. And then the penultimate attraction is a brand new attraction for this year as well, Zozo's Grindhouse.
Yes, it's brand new. A lot of people I've seen online have been saying, oh, well, that was going to be a hooded maze and they've had to change it. Well, that's totally rubbish, actually, because in January, we decided not to do a hooded maze well before COVID reared its ugly head. So it was always going to be not a hooded maze anyway this year. Yeah. So over the last few months, it's been rebuilt entirely inside and it is now Zozo's Grindhouse. Zozo is a killer clown. And Grindhouse being a popular form of movie, and also the actual term Grindhouse, if you research it, is more to do with travelling carnivals. So this is a travelling carnival funhouse gone wrong. And it has a lot of different rooms and effects in it, some of which you'll have seen in other carnival-based attractions, some of which are new, like the Tryptophobic room, which is really weird. And yeah, that's been completed and is an entirely new attraction experience this year. I suspect that a lot of guests will turn the corner and see it and think, oh, that's the one where you put a hood on. But it's not. There is no hoods whatsoever. So I hope people don't make that assumption and don't go in on because they don't like the hood. There are no hoods whatsoever.
Perfect. Excellent. And that's something I want to ask, actually, before we get onto our last attraction of Psychomantium, is so you're a very popular attraction all around the UK and well-known around the world. But do you often find that you get some people like keyboard warriors just literally thinking that they know better? They make their own assumptions of it's going to be a hooded maze and they just make up their own rubbish, even though you guys stated clearly that even back in January you decided it wasn't going to be a hooded maze. That's got to get slightly frustrating from time to time.
Nothing frustrates me at all. I don't read rubbish. I couldn't care less what keyboard warriors say. I don't read anything like that anyway. The only reason I know that this has been said online is because I've been told by our marketing team. I really don't have time to read what other people think. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. But if people are second guessing things that they have no idea about, then, you know, really they have no knowledge to say such thing. So I would say ignore them, discover for yourself.
Absolutely, ignore them, come to Zozo's Grindhouse and find out for yourself and see without a hood, because there's no hoods whatsoever at Scare Kingdom Scream Park this year. Right, so our final attraction, Psychomantium, is Scared Stiff this year.
It is. Psychomantium is obviously, as you've mentioned earlier in the interview, a totally different style of experience to the rest of the attractions here at Scare Kingdom Scream Park, but it usually involves things, a high level of movement of guests around, of very close, actors coming very close, sometimes involves consuming things or doing things with props, picking them up, putting them down, etc. So all of that's gone in the bin, obviously, because of COVID. It is a purely visual experience now. So nothing will touch you. Nothing will be asked to be eaten or held by you. Everything you witness in the show is only what you will see. And when I spoke to the creative behind this, who's visioned this based on my concept about a week and a half ago, I told them to tone it down.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if people think, oh, you can't do that sort of attraction if you're not going to touch and you're not going to give us things to eat, that's rubbish. It's pretty horrible and certainly something I wouldn't like to experience. But then I haven't been through Psychomantium for about 7 years, so I don't go through them anyway. But yeah, it is all visual. It is horrible. It is shocking. And it is presenting that show in a totally new way. And all you know, all well done to the creatives that have done this, following my lead, because I wasn't involved in the development after giving them the concept until a couple of weeks back. And as I say, I asked them to change it in certain ways because I think it was too much.
Too much. Wow. Well, I'm mega excited about that. I mean, I think I've been through all but bar one incarnation of Psycho Mantu now over the years. I've only safe worded once, but that's because
I think it's been about 23 or 24 versions.
There's been loads. Absolutely. Yeah. And we all have our favorites, but every single season, there's always something new to make you cringe or gag. Yes. or cry. But like you say, making it a visual experience, I completely agree with you in the fact that it can still be horrifying and scary or sick and twisted, because it's just how using one of the senses that we use in theatre, senses theatre of cruelty, which is basically what these kind of attractions are. That's what they're for, really.
It's really important to note that what happens in Psychomantium isn't purely down to what you see. It's also down to the set and how that makes you feel.
Of course.
It's down to the sound, it's down to the temperature, it's down to the smells. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about what you see. And although we've changed the way it's presented, I think people will come out with their jaw on the floor.
Yes, definitely. I can't wait. Also, well, I mean, there's only really one last thing to sort of bring up and mention, and we've already discussed it slightly in saying that Psychomantium is going to be more of a visual experience, the fact that there's no hoods whatsoever this year at Scare Kingdom Scream Park. But what are the just to give consumers that little bit of confidence that they need to come out this year, what sort of COVID-19 measures are you putting in place at Scare Kingdom Scream Park?
Lots and lots and lots. So the first thing, which works in our favour because it's always been the same, is that our park is a one-way route. So for COVID, you need a one-way route, and our park already is. So people go into the park and go into each attraction consecutively. They don't have the option of moving backwards and forwards against each other. So we already were doing that anyway. We have reduced our capacity. So it is six people per group. It is six people for COVID compliancy. So those may be from the same or different social bubbles. Yep. We have introduced sanitizer stations at the entrance to each of our attractions. We have removed touch points from the attractions. We have reduced stop and listen points to the ones I mentioned earlier. Yep. All guests and all actors will be wearing PPE to cover their faces to ensure that that is being complied with. There is a cleaning schedule which is happening backstage throughout the park and the attractions. We are doing a temperature check of every guest upon entry and a temperature check of every actor upon entry to the green room. We've got increased signage. We're enforcing social distancing between each of the groups. Our dispatch is 2 minutes as opposed to with a bigger group. So as I mentioned, it's six. And those measures collectively are the same as is being orchestrated by various other attractions that have been open since the beginning of August. Yes, similarly shut. And so I think we're lucky in the respect that we have less people on site anyway than other parks because they come from a time ticket. It's online bookings only. So we already were probably, and I'm making an assumption here, but we were already probably significantly lower in terms of capacity than many of the other attractions and theme parks that operate, because we've always focused on the quality of the production, and that means a slower throughput, and it means less number of people on the park. Our car park is not as big as many other attractions, so we are already condensed into having less people on site than we would you would do maybe if you were one of the other parks. So collectively, the COVID compliancy that we're following and all of the government guidelines that we are adhering to are all clearly displayed on our website at scarekingdom.com and also on the park through signage and through staff. So we are COVID compliant, COVID secure in that regard. Our venue is also accredited with Good to Go. Mrs. Dowson's Farm Park is where we operate the park, and it has the accreditation of Good to Go. So we have put in place all of the necessary changes in order to comply with a safe and fun experience for every guest, and that's what's most important.
Absolutely, definitely. Well, I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our listeners will be happy to hear that obviously everything is COVID secure and they'll feel safe and secure at Scare Kingdom Scream Park this year. And tickets are on sale now, so where's the best place that people can grab their tickets?
Just go to the website at scarekingdom.com.
Perfect. Excellent. I think that brings us to the perfect end of this interview. Jason Carr, creative director of Scare Kingdom Scream Park, a huge thank you for coming on to the Scare Track podcast, and we look forward to experiencing all the attractions this October.
Great to be with you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're listening to Scare Track.
So there we go, folks. First of all, a huge thank you to Jason Carr, creative director of Scare Kingdom Scream Park. Really appreciate him taking time out of his busy schedule to come onto the Scare Track podcast. Not only talk about Scare Kingdom, its attractions and how it's grown over the years, but also let us all rest assured that it is a fully COVID secure, safe place to be this Halloween season. Just take your mask, make sure you are feeling well and healthy, and have a real good scare this year. We can't wait to visit ourselves, and you can visit yourself as well. Like I say, wear a mask, go get scared, get your tickets now, www.scarekingdom.com. That's scarekingdom.com. And they've got some fantastic attractions. Each and every season we go, we always love Manor Mortis, Body Snatchers, and I'm a sucker for Psychomantium. I really am. Love it. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Scare Track podcast. Be sure to be following us on our social media channels. As always, we are on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search for Scare Track. You can get this podcast where you're listening now on any podcast platform, or direct on our website, www.scaretrack.co.uk. Also, be sure to follow us on our YouTube channel, where we bring you mini Scarecam episodes along with all our coaster track content as well. youtube.com/scaretrack. Just click that subscribe and that bell notification to make sure you never miss an episode. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Scare Track podcast. A huge thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.